Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Season 3 of the Fanfiction Tapes. I'm your host today, Maya, pronouns she, her, and today I'm joined by...
That guy with the he, him pronouns, Dylan.
Barry, that guy with the he, him pronouns who watches that site collapsed. Again.
Ian, that guy with the he, him pronouns who remembers that site.
I have no idea what they're on about, folks. Anywho, today's topic is all about writing plans changing. How and why does it happen, what to do when it does, and that sort of thing. And it's fairly common for writers to have something of a plan. It may not necessarily be something very convoluted and in detail. For me, it's often more vibes, maybe a certain theme that I want to be carried throughout the work. But something like that is... It's pretty common for writers to have some idea of what they want to happen. It's also very common for the end product to not be what that plan suggests. And there's dozens of varieties of this happening out there, from stories of characters just simply not doing what the writer wants, or from just unexpected themes and messages popping up as you write it.
Yeah, I think, you most commonly see this in, like, stories where you are getting, like, release after release. You'll see, like, in TV shows or, you know, in new seasons of stuff or a new movie, you'll hear about, oh, this is what we originally planned and we had to change it. Mostly, you know. You hear about how in the original trilogy, George Lucas was basically fine by his pants, you know? Like, oh yeah, this actually meant something completely different. You know, Luke and Leia were never meant to be siblings, and then, well, now they are.
I think that was obvious from Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
I think even Darth Vader ending up as Luke's father was something that was added in after they started.
Yeah, if you go by what George really planned in the first movie, the two biggest reveals in the next two movies were not there when he made the first one. It's just nothing contradicted them, really. So, yeah.
Literally, why not the movies?
Yes. Yeah. It is funny how, like, you know, one of the most legendary cinema pieces, you know, this cultural thing, you know, it was made by a guy who went, actually, this big plot element will add that I didn't plan originally, which shows you guys, you don't need to carefully plan out everything.
I mean, I believe Stephen King and Neil Gaiman, two very famous and successful authors, have also spoken about stuff just kind of happening like that.
Yeah, you can always find elements that just in the moment, or like you realize, oh, this works. You know, mm-hmm. I didn't see it until now, but this works for what I need.
Sometimes what you have planned just doesn't work. Sometimes it does work, but the other thing's better. It's all about feeling it out.
Especially when you're telling like a long-form story and see like reactions to certain things. Because you can see reactions and like be like, okay, this thing that we had planned clearly isn't working and we've got to change it to something else. You know?
Yeah.
Or just your original idea doesn't work anymore with what you have. Which is what happened to George R. R. Martin, where he originally planned to have a 5-year gap. And then, due to the way he structured the story, realize, oh, fuck, I can't have a 5-year gap because I would just be telling so many flashbacks because I want to give, like, specific moments of character growth. I'll just write through this 5-year gap, but also then shorten that 5-year gap to a couple of months in world. And that's why we haven't had a book in fucking 13 years. Because he had a plan, and then realized he couldn't do the plan, tried to work through the plan, it just in a different way, and realized, oh yeah, this is not working.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Have you guys ever seen the OG, A Game of Thrones, A Song of Ice and Fire plans?
No, I haven't.
Oh.
Given that I've not read any of the books or seen any episodes of the show, no.
Tell us more about these mysterious plans.
I mean, complete characters who are quite important are just not there. Like, Sansa doesn't exist in the original. The characters we get mentioned are Bran, Rob, Arya, and Jon, as well as any other, like, sort of thing. But Sansa doesn't exist as a character. Tyrion is meant to be a complete bad guy. You know, Jaime is meant to be, you know, a bad guy too. Like, it's a lot more focused on sort of just a general Stark versus Lannister sort of thing, and also awkward implications of Jon Snow and Arya falling in love. What?
Oh, okay, wait, hold on a second. Wait, run that one back by me again?
Yeah. So, original plan was sort of a love triangle between Arya, Tyrion, and Jon. And that's like Tyrion's motivations for doing some bad stuff to the Starks. Which makes sense when you look at the bones of it and see that in the actual story we do get, Tyrion does marry a Stark daughter. He is shortly married to Sansa. And you can see sort of the bones and ideas of things from this like original thing. But it's a much simpler story. And that's when we talk about planning then, and we talk about the different styles, you get someone like Stephen King, who kind of just goes very fast through his work. You can write a book very quickly, and like it's more like sort of a feeling sort of thing, whereas George R. R. Martin is sort of a careful planner who lets his ideas get too big. And that's why I describe Game of Thrones as really is you had an idea, and then you kept on adding to that idea, and that idea got too big for your initial idea that you were still trying to follow the sort of structure of.
O plus ratio plus skill issue?
Skill issue.
Kind of a skill issue, but more of, you needed more self-control. All that you did was good, but you've put yourself in a hole now. That either you need like 4 more books on top of what you already planned, because he originally planned for it to only be a trilogy.
Now look at it.
Yeah.
It is a trilogy in 6 parts.
I do like the use of Stephen King and Martin as extremes, because Stephen King writes like 15 pages a day, never plans anything, and wrote Cujo while so high on coke that he doesn't even remember it. Whereas George R. R. Martin still has yet to finish the latest book, but has planned out like most of it.
Yeah, and it's sort of, the problem is he gets stuck in like, in problems where he's like, well, I don't know how to do this one thing. I'm going to be stuck in there for about 4 years. And you're like, oh boy. But even it's not just like, you know, that sort of media. But we've seen before certain characters get quite popular unexpectedly. Like, have you guys ever experienced like a show where a certain character who probably wasn't meant to get as popular as they did happened?
Yes. Yes, I have.
I think TV Tropes even has a term for this. I think it's ensemble dark horse.
Yes. Ruby has like 5.
Yeah, I was gonna say we're all here as fans of Ruby. I think we can name a couple.
I think this is why people think that Ruby has cast bloat, because there are so many ensemble dark horses in the show, even though the core cast remains at just a handful. They're constantly rotating in these, you know, secondary and side characters that are very interesting.
Hmm.
This is an problem sometimes for the Well, I don't want to say for the quality of the show, but it is a problem for the quality of the show.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I think the most famous example that I can think of this happening is Daryl Dixon in The Walking Dead media. And this was a character who was planned to, like, die in, like, the second season, but got so popular that he essentially became the face of the franchise, the most popular character.
You know? That's the cop guy, right?
No, that's the main character. Daryl is, you know, the, like, biker hunter dude who uses a crossbow and is badass.
Dylan,
it's Norman Reedus.
I hate to break it to you. I have never seen The Walking Dead.
Never?
Shame. I also have never seen The Walking Dead. It just did not appeal to me.
Shame.
Shame.
It doesn't sound very interesting.
I mean, it's zombie media, okay? You get what you get.
Insufficient lesbians.
There's a ton of lesbians in the show.
Name five.
I probably could if I wasn't in the middle of a podcast right now.
I don't find the appeal of zombie media like Walking Dead all that appealing. I don't have that pessimistic a view of human nature.
Mm-hmm.
Human society would not collapse like that.
Luckily for you, I have a wonderful zombie media that does not depict humanity as a constant Ouroboros of suffering. It's called Left 4 Dead 2, and I have 1,500 mods for it. That's not exaggeration. I've checked.
Have you guys ever heard, like, an original plan for, like, a piece of media you were interested in and thought that I'm glad we avoided that, or oh, I so wish that could have been it? Like, have you ever heard something like that?
Yes. Yes, I have. It's definitely happened to me a few times, because I would hear about early plans and I'd be like, yes, I want that. Then I'd hear about other early plans and I'd be like, if that happened, this would not be as beloved as it is, and I know that for a fact.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Persona 5, you can find its early plans on TV Tropes, and like half of them are, please God, I wish this was in it, and the other half are, I'm surprised the game got this popular in the alternate timeline where these happened. Like, some of this gets dire.
What about you, Ian, Maya?
So, you can get your hands on The Way of Kings Prime, which is Brandon Sanderson's original draft for the first book of the Stormlight Archives, and apparently it is a very, very different story.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know many details about it. I'm not sure whether I want to read it myself. From what I've heard, it's not exactly bad, but it's a little,
I mean, it's Brandon Sanderson. His worst material is never bad. Like, I've read nearly everything he's written, and even his stuff that is his absolute weakest, I wouldn't call it bad. It's still a good book, but compared to some of his other stuff, his weaker stuff is, yeah, well, weak. Like, Elantris is one where I'm usually like, yeah, it doesn't matter too much if you don't read it, because for most of Cosmere, the stuff in Elantris doesn't feature, and, well, it's not as good as his later work.
Yeah, there's, like, a few details that come up in later books that you can do the Leonardo DiCaprio pointing meme if you know about Elantrians.
Yeah, And that's honestly one of the cool things about Sanderson is he's grown a lot as a writer, and his plans have changed. A different mention of plans changing is the Mistborn Era 2 books were originally supposed to be like a novella.
Right.
And not not a four-book series of their own that actually is now a pretty central pillar to the Cosmere. Actually, I saw the post from Sanderson himself talking about this where, like, yeah, he was just, like, kind of dicking around and having a bit of fun with the characters in Alloy of Law. And so he ended up putting out a fairly weak work at a very pivotal point in the series. Anywho.
But yeah, it is interesting when you do hear early plans, like sort of production notes or ideas that were originally and never came to fold. Like, over the years, I've heard so many things related to, like, sort of Power Rangers original plans and stuff like that. Because many people who worked on the show were quite open, you know, about stuff. And isn't that, like, sort of a... It's weird when you hear that certain productions are very tight-lipped on that sort of thing. Like, apparently there's a very strong hold on Disney sitcom original ideas. Like, those people are not allowed to say anything about, the like, sort of what they originally planned and whatever, which is very surprising.
Honestly, I think talking about how your work has changed over time is interesting. I have a couple works where it's very different from the original shape of what I set out to do, and I enjoy talking about how it shifted. There's a couple works where, like, it wasn't even a conscientious choice to make the change. It just... I woke up one day and I realized that I was not where I had started.
This happens to me a lot because I tend to just wing it a lot when I'm writing. So I will create characters and scenarios and then just kind of let it vibe from there. And I think that kind of speaks a lot to the mentality of why these things happen. Because... characters may not have agency outside of us, but we can, like, go, well, no, they wouldn't do this, they wouldn't make this choice, they wouldn't even go here. This one shouldn't even be in this country, but we'll get to that one. And it's like, as you do that, and as you build on your ideas, things just sort of shift. And by the time you realize it, a different scene has happened, and you're like, I prefer this. This is better than my first idea.
Yeah, for me, something that's happened is I have a collaborative work that I'm working on. I don't necessarily want to commit too much to it to the public record yet. Where there was kind of always a bit of perhaps unconscious working in of themes about fascism. And... I don't think this was the case. I could be wrong. Neither I or the person I'm working with kind of really realized that this was the case. And then just one day when talking about it, one of us said explicitly fascism. And we were like, yep, that's where it is. And that's kind of a plan shift. It's a little different because it's less, you know... It's less harsh of a shift, and it's more of a just...
More just kind of, like, realizing...
The slow erosion of a riverbank.
Yeah, like, realizing where you've already changed, and then just committing to it.
It is crazy, though, when you do find those works, and you see these authors who are like, oh yeah, no, I planned all of this, and you're like... You plan, like, this 35 and more light novel from the beginning? You planned individual chapters around when they would happen? You're crazy.
That sounds like alien behavior.
Yeah. But it's sort of like you do get people like that. Like, certain people are like, you know, the story gets a little bit away from what they originally intended at, like, a certain point, but they can get back on the track. It's like... You know, you get people like that, or you get people who are like, I'm just going as I feel. I have general ideas, but for the vast majority, I'm just trying to move closer towards an idea. When you find people who are like, I've meticulously planned each movement here to get to a bunch of like checkpoints, you're like, wow, that's wild.
Wow, it's impressive you planned out this much, but have you considered writing?
But it takes like a real like discipline and dedication to be like that thorough and be like, nope, I will not deviate. I will hit these checkpoints and just reach to each place. And this is what happens in between.
Yep. Meanwhile, I have ADHD.
Yeah, I'm kind of much the same, Barry. It's I've got a vibe, you know, I go, I want this to be about, like, this theme, or I want to, like, have a motif of featuring exercises that I'm fairly familiar with, because then I can write about that.
Yeah.
And that's about all the thought that goes in before I start vomiting keys out of my mouth and onto the screen.
Sounds painful. You should get that looked at.
Yeah, probably, but like in this economy?
Oh, good point. The way I do it is that I think of a premise, I think of characters, I wing it until it's done, and then I realize, oh, this theme existed. And that could sound really like irresponsible, because oh, wow, everything you do is really flimsy. But no, for me, that helps actually tell a good story, because I can let things flow properly. If everything's too rigid, then you're going to start overthinking it, and then when something doesn't work, you have to commit to it, and then that becomes a black mark on your work, and then it goes from there. Overplanning, to me, is more difficult than not having a plan at all.
Yeah, it's funny, like, we talk about this, and this is, like, a good comparison to make, is, like, you look at how Lucas presented the fall of the Republic, and I think that was, like, mostly planned out, and he had, like, a lot of details of thinking, okay, yeah, this is how it's gonna go, we'll hit these big things, and that will show, you know, like, the problems with a running democracy and everything, and how it can quickly fall into fascism.
Yep.
Whereas some unnecessary praise to J.K. Rowling, but yep. I think she shows
yes.
how a democracy or like a democratic system can fall into fascism better. The problem is J.K. Rowling never intended to show that.
Well, she did. She just thinks that transition to fascism is a good thing.
The transphobia.
Sure.
yeah. Oh, were you talking about the Death Eaters here? Because then I am going to throw rocks at you.
No, I was talking about how, like, she shows, like, the incompetency of, like, certain people in established governments. Like, the government before the Death Eaters, the Ministry of Magic before, and how, you know, they had members infiltrate, and the establishment covered up their ears and were like, no, there's no problem here. Nothing's wrong. We're presenting a strong hand. Oh, this does not exist. And then when it does exist, it's already taken over. You know, like, I don't think she intended to show that as explicitly as she did. But it's actually, like, quite good. The problem is she then gives, like, the answer to that for her was, and what do we do to solve this issue? We change nothing.
This is your reminder that Harry becomes a cop.
This is your reminder that you should not support the racism wizards.
This is your reminder that she named a guy Seamus Finnegan.
Okay, we got an episode on that soon.
Very.
But it's sort of the general point is, is that so the meticulously planned one sometimes comes off as a bit more wooden and a bit more, okay, we've jumped a little bit far here. How did this happen?
Yeah.
And that's sort of the thing with the prequels, though, is what we all agree, is some things are a little far-fetched. Okay, a random Jedi went out and commissioned a clone army, and we've just happened to find it now? Wild.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, to be fair, though, what else were they going to do?
Better story.
Hey, I grew up with that movie, all right? You don't need to rub it in.
I also did.
Oh, well then, I'm dumb.
I'm not Ian over there.
I mean, I was born well after the original trilogy came out, so...
Yeah, but you were born in, like... What do they call that age in between, like... Return of the Jedi and the prequels coming out?
Millennials?
Old?
No, I mean the Star Wars era, like... Didn't they call that, like, a... because there was, like, hardly any Star Wars media for, like, what was it, like, 15, 16 years?
Like,
isn't that
the Dark Ages?
Early?
I think it's actually something like that, Ian. I think you're right.
The early Legends?
That was a joke.
I don't know. I'd look it up, but I've made enough clickety-clacks for one recording, I think.
So, I'm just going to throw things at you, Dylan, because that same time period is when the Thrawn trilogy came out, I think. The other movies released, because I think most of the sequels, the prequels...
They're like 99, 2001, and like 2004.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then the Thrawn trilogy would, in fact, have predated that, as they were published 91 to 93.
Yeah.
So some of the best Star Wars content, period, was published in that time. There was actually a lot, I think, out then.
Yeah, and that's sort of the point, is like Star Wars continued, but through mediums like that, rather than big expensive movies.
Yeah, the early Legends period, before we had Knights of the Old Republic, or Force Unleashed, or...
Clone Wars.
The Clone Wars. We know a guy who says it's bad. He is dumb.
Yeah.
There's 2003 Clone Wars. That one was really good.
We are tangenting quite a bit from our intended topic, but it's all good.
But hey, what do you know? Plans change.
Yeah. I mean,
damn it! You beat me to it!
I mean, getting on this topic is like a little bit, you know, like I just want to stand on my soapbox and say, for all like the crapping on like Legends, I kind of do, where it's like, for a modern audience, it doesn't work. And by a modern audience, I mean, like, you know, certain, like, general audiences don't care about a lot of that stuff. I still rather that over, like, the commercialization of Star Wars that's happened since Disney bought it, where it's like, oh, we gotta have, like, a big budget Star Wars TV show or movie every 10 seconds.
Yeah, I will say, some of the new Star Wars lore and media and directions have been good, but it feels like they're trying too hard to push it back into mainstream. And I would prefer if they slowed down and just tried to focus on the art. But it's Disney, so that's a shitpost and a half.
Hey, at least they're not Sony.
Oh, God, don't. I have found two threads of all the crazy shit that's happened to market Madam Web. Two threads.
Okay, we are getting quite off topic.
The plan changed. You beat me to the joke. Damn it.
I want to ask you before we go on, Maya, has there ever been a plan you heard of or something that, you know, changed in, like, something you liked?
Well, I mentioned the Cosmere earlier. There's some stuff where I've heard rumors of that, but there's nothing I can really verify or say with confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Because the writers have been vague as shit. Gravity Falls, actually. You know, I'm going to bring this up. This is kind of related to plans changing, is especially with stuff where part of the draw is figuring out what's going on. It's not uncommon for when the audience starts to figure out what's going on, if they're doing so before when they're supposed to, it's not uncommon for writers to just kind of panic and change what's going on. See Lost.
See Westworld.
See Five Nights at Freddy's.
Anywho, so rather than commit any of those egregious mistakes, which, by the way, this is one of the cases where I will say you should never change your plans, necessarily.
It is a bad reason.
Yes, that is a bad reason to change your plans. Because it's rewarding for an audience to have gone, see, look, I fucking knew it.
Yeah, like, it's better to lay the groundwork to a plot twist or major event happening and people to guess that and go, oh, I hope this happened, rather than giving something they didn't want.
However, it can be bad for engagement if the audience figures things out too far in advance compared to when you want to actually reveal things, which brings us back to Gravity Falls.
Yes, and what Alex Hirsch did, which when the audience of the show, which had it had caught on beyond like the intended age group and the intended size, so the vast human thinking machine that is the internet started putting together one too many puzzle pieces. And the cast and crew were panicking because the fuck are you gonna do about it? Change your plans? No, that's cringe, as aforementioned. So instead of doing that, they created a false leak and sold it a little bit by vague posting about it on Twitter before deleting the vague post to, you know, make it look believable.
I know the incident you're talking about. I've seen that image. It's the funniest shit I've ever seen a studio do for a mystery.
Yeah, I think it's hilarious. And honestly, I think it's a better move than just changing the plan because, well, one, it's funny and it doesn't affect really later watchers who aren't going to have this collective brain power necessarily. Right, this type of thing, which 4chan is also notorious for having this similar phenomenon where you get enough people together in a room and let them start thinking, and you can actually do some pretty amazing things.
Infinite monkeys, etc.
Yes, that's exactly it. And you don't get infinite monkeys when you're watching a show 10 years later, like I did with Gravity Falls. While I was actually the target audience at the time it was airing, and I did catch sparse episodes, I never really watched it regularly. And because the writers chose not to change their plans then and just f*** with the audience, I got the full experience of, oh shit, this is what the twist is, without it being undermined. Because when you are foreshadowing and building up to a certain way, to a certain reveal, if you change that, it just feels cheap. It's not as enjoyable as if all the elements are there. We've talked about this before on the show, but foreshadowing, some people should figure out foreshadowing. That's something that I think you should, as a writer, just kind of learn to live with, and that way you can make a better end story because, well, okay, I don't have to worry about being smarter than the entire f***ing world, but maybe I can pull the wool over a couple people's eyes. They go, whoa, I'm so shocked. Other people go, ha, I f***ing knew it, because ha, I f***ing knew it. That is a great feeling. It is. Yeah. Very, very fun to be able to start putting the pieces together. It's rewarding your audience for engaging with your piece of media.
And that's also a lot better than giving them something crap that you had to make up on the spot.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I don't like that kind of pivot aside from it being just bad writing, is that just makes your audience seem stupid in hindsight. Like, oh, you thought you figured it out? Well, we changed it. Like, they put their brain power together to create a conclusion, and because it wasn't what you wanted them to, you change it? That's either going to make your audience look stupid, or it's going to make you look stupid. And only one of those things can be true. So which is it? Still trying to think of an example of that.
But yeah, whenever I do hear about a writer or someone involved in like some sort of narrative doing that, I think, you are so dumb. Come on, just get over your ego about wanting to surprise everyone.
Yeah, I mean, if all you want to do is subvert expectations... Game of Thrones Season 8.
No, Game of Thrones Season 8 wasn't about even hitting things that we expected. It was just, it shit.
No, what I mean is that it subverted, they did what they did to subvert expectations.
The only thing that really falls into that is, like, Arya being the one to kill the Night King. Which, yes, is, like, dumb. You should have just let the person who narratively makes sense do it.
Yeah.
Instead of, oh, we can kind of put, you know, together a reason with Plato.
We can kind of make up a reason if we make it out of clay and then cook it. Imagine a suit tugging at his collar.
We've talked a little bit about a case where you shouldn't change your plans. What about some cases where you should just kind of go with the flow of the plans changing?
Well, I've already mentioned one, because it would make your story better sometimes. I think another good time is when you find out through, like, sharing your work or outside eyes or playtesting or whatever medium you're using is... when you present both versions to whoever your beta tester, and they say they prefer the change, that's probably a good sign of change, because that's what's going to get people more interested in your art.
I think it's sort of when you realize what people like about your story isn't what you have planned for the future. Because there's a lot of times where someone wants to tell sort of a certain type of story, and they plan for that, and they go, this is what I want my story to be, all right. And then you sort of get into writing it, and you're writing it in a certain way, and you realize, so what's getting a good response here is none of the stuff building up to what I've planned, but there's other stuff I've been, you know, sprinkling in or writing here. Maybe I should try and focus a bit more on these aspects. And I think it's like when we talk about stuff that requires more weekly audience engagement, whether it's like, you know, like a manga getting a response and being like, okay, I can see fans aren't taking to this sort of thing. I'll have to pivot a bit. It's sort of like a dichotomy. Sometimes you need to listen to the audience, and sometimes you need to tell the audience to shut up. They don't know what they're talking about. It's all a dichotomy, and it's hard to tell when you are right and when you are wrong in that instance, you know?
Yeah.
Because, of course, at the end of the day, it's the artist and the artist's story and what they want to tell. But other times, you are presenting, like, something, and... through that response, you might make your own art better. Because it's still your thing at the end of the day. It's just telling you your original thought on what it was going to be isn't that as good as you thought, and you might need to change it.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely had times where I'm, like, writing something. I think, yeah, this is cool. This is neat. And then a beta reader or whoever will go, yeah, this just kind of doesn't really work the way you're imagining. I would try revamping it maybe in this way.
Sometimes the best thing you can ever do is have someone else look at what you're doing. That outside perspective is always going to find something you can improve. It's always going to find something you missed. and it's going to help make whatever you're doing better. Whether that be changing something or even just coming up with something new to try, like creating a new change, reinforcing it, that sort of thing. It's always nice to have someone else in your corner to help you with whatever you're doing.
And if you can't, for whatever reason, bring in a real person, there's always rubber duck debugging.
Oh, the best kind of debugging.
This is a term from programming where when you're trying to figure out what's going wrong in your code, you try and explain it to a handy rubber duck that you keep nearby. Or replace rubber duck with whatever inanimate object you're imbuing with personality. It is a surprisingly good technique for, you know, figuring out where you're screwing up, because it forces you to sort of put yourself into a different headspace for looking at what you're working on.
Yeah. I mean, I swear by rubber ducky debugging as a programmer. I actually have a rubber ducky on my desk. Although I don't usually use a rubber ducky for it, I usually find the nearest human and word vomit at them.
Word vomit's always fun.
Regular vomit, not as fun.
Blood vomit, that's even worse.
I haven't done that yet.
Plenty of time left.
You got a long life ahead of you.
I mean, who knows? We got like, I don't know, 10 or 15 more minutes left of this podcast. We'll see before the end of this.
So, I am a little surprised that we've gotten this far into talking about plans changing and stories with so many of us who play D&D and even...
Oh, crap! I was going to bring that up. I was going to bring that up. I have an IRL game now. And
congratulations.
Thank you. It's played at our local library. That's not the point.
Nice.
I have a character I play at the table. He is a silver dragonborn warlock. And he has shifted in ways I didn't even expect. Which is a really good way to think about that. Like, I know your example is about DMs and their plans changing. But, like, even as a player, like, as you play and as you progress, your experiences change what you thought your character was going to be about. Like, I thought my character was just going to be this studious warlock type. And then two wild magic surges later, and he is an egomaniacal god power seeker. And, like, I didn't expect any of that. And it's been awesome.
Yeah, I think we kind of ended up killing one of Dylan's games by, as a group, just refusing to commit to any plans.
Oh.
Oops.
Remember the Wild Mount game, Dylan?
The problem with that was I made, like, three or four plans of, like, okay, this is the direction they could go here. I can see they could go this way. It would take them this long to get to here, or this long to get to here. Okay, and these are sort of the ideas. Okay. They wanted to go to, like, the least developed place on the continent, not only in civilization, but also lore presented within the campaign guide itself. And I was like, and that is also one of the longest possible journeys. And it's very difficult to write just journeys in D&D. You know, because you've got to keep on thinking of stuff to keep them entertained, or just, like, sort of fast travel and be like, here we are. You know.
The greatest pastime in D&D is screwing with the Dungeon Master.
Well, they didn't go in with, like, the idea. It was just all the players decided between themselves a poor idea.
Which is also a favorite pastime of D&D players.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I have, you know, I've, in the past, I had plans for, like, D&D characters. I've had plans as a DM. I cut out whole arcs, you know, stuff I had originally planned because I just wasn't feeling that aspect anymore. I wanted to do something else. And when it comes to plans changing in D&D, it can sometimes be very difficult to deal with. I definitely found that when we played in a campaign, me and Maya, that due to how the story went, it didn't even sort of allow me to fulfill my character arc within the main story, which was a little disappointing. But it really does show how, you know, you do have to be in, like, constant communication with your DM about how you're feeling, what you liked and everything. And, you know, you can bug the DM a little bit. You can do that. Don't worry about it.
Whether, no matter which side of the table you're on, D&D is always about plans changing. That's how collaborative storytelling really works, is that you go in with a plan, and the other guys decide, we're not going to do that plan. And now, and then you're suddenly traveling on the road with a dragon that you smuggled.
Yeah, I mean, as a DM, I don't really commit much to plans beyond specifically what I'm preparing for the next session for the players to do. It is, I'll be like, okay, I'll have these hooks I want to dangle in front of the players. I don't necessarily know which one of the hooks the players are going to take, and they could all lead to wildly different plots.
And that's why you leave a notice board in every town.
Basically, yeah, that's part of what I've ended up doing, is having a notice board or something similar, or having NPCs go, hey, I have a problem, and I have something you want.
If you just turn every town into a town from Oblivion, they'll always have something to do. I say that because a lot of characters in Oblivion will just walk up to you, exposit about what kind of problem they're dealing with, and then you just go, yeah, okay, I'll do that.
It's not dissimilar to that, although usually the players will end up approaching, at least for me, I'll have it set up such that the players head to an area because they want something, the NPC has it, and then wants them to do something for them, so they don't have to do it themselves, basically.
The best way is to make an interesting character who they want to talk to and want to help. It's like, oh yeah, but I don't really care about the stonemason. But if that stonemason is a disaster bisexual woman with purple hair, now I want to talk to them.
You had me at,
or perhaps
you had me at every single adjective there.
Or perhaps the party is stranded in a desert and then a friendly copper dragon shows up and offers them a ride home if they'll help out with evil blue dragon who's trying to muzzle in on their territory.
Or, best of both worlds, they're stranded in the desert and a disaster bisexual woman with purple hair turns up to try and recruit their help against the blue dragon.
And it turns out she's secretly a dragon in disguise.
Yes.
Of course.
Yes.
Yes. Dylan, when are we doing that one shot?
I'll check my calendar.
Dibs, I'm playing the bard.
Dibs, I'm playing the other bard. We'll play bass. I'll play bass.
Dibs on the explosives.
That's not unusual for you.
Maya and explosives scares me more than heights and... No, I have a terrible fear of heights.
You know, for all my reputation, I actually haven't cast the spell Fireball very often.
Really?
But the one time I have, I've cast it on self.
Yeah, I expected that.
Intentionally.
Oh.
Yep.
No, actually, I expected that part too. Yep.
I think we should probably wrap it up here before we get fully tangented off into talking about Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, Dylan. Dylan.
Oh.
Wrestling has plans changing.
Yeah, but that's
we don't have time to talk about that right now. But we do have a wrestling episode coming up in April.
Yeah,
we can talk about that. Maybe we can fit that in there.
So, Ian, do we have anything in the mailbag?
We do not have any new mail today. So, if you listeners would like to tell us about when your plans changed. You can email us. Our address is fanfictapes@gmail.com. You can also tell us about plans changing by leaving us a comment on our YouTube channel. We would also appreciate if you would leave us a rating and review on whatever service you use to catch our podcast. You can also get in touch with us over social media. We currently just have an account on Twitter, which Maya runs.
Yes, and that is at fanfictiontapes, capital F, capital T, just one word, no space or dash or anything. And I post usually about when episodes go up. Sometimes I also shitpost, and there's often sometimes information about, you know, maybe a sentence or two about what the process was like on our end, if I remember to put that in. For those of you who listen today, our next episode will be on how nobody's perfect, some of the problems with our favorite authors. We're going to be talking only about the people we like, not about the people we hate, and poking holes in their work. I may or may not have said that to at myself, because I know I'll want to complain. But, Barry.
Yo?
Before we completely close out the episode, do you have any works or social media of yours that you would like to promote to our listeners?
Yes. I have a YouTube channel, Greatness942. I mostly do amateur gaming videos. I have an account on Archive on Our Own, Greatness942, and I have a Twitter account called Aramis. I deleted my old one, which was called Greatness942. But follow me there. I shitpost and talk about current events sometimes. That's about it.
So, I am and have been Maya, and today I was joined by...
I am and always will be Dylan.
I am and always will be Barry.
And I am Ian. Until next time, bye!